Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 85 for May 31st, 2007.
So what else are you doing while you listen to the PC Gamer Podcast? Are you playing a game? Are you talking on the phone? Are you feeding your dog? Well, if you're a mega multitasker, then you should enter PC Gamers and AMD's Mega Tasking Contest for a chance to win a Vigor gaming PC powered by AMD. Just make a short film that demonstrates you megatasking, which is basically you doing as many things as you can at once. Upload it on YouTube, and you can win a fat new Vigor gaming PC. So for the rules, go to www.pcgamer.com/megatasking. Maybe you can do it while you're reading a PC Gamer magazine, doing your taxes, cooking lasagna, washing your car, and feeding your fish.
I'm your host, PC Gamer Senior Associate Editor Dan Stapleton. With me today are Editor-in-Chief Greg Viederman.
Hello!
Senior Executive Intern Norman Chan.
Why did I click on that picture?
Yes! Our Backspace columnist and former Editor-in-Chief, Gary Weta.
My eyes, the goggles, they do nothing!
No, it's actually the goggles do nothing. I've had to correct Greg on this several times in the magazine. But it's like the most often used Simpsons quote, and everybody gets it wrong. And our producer out in Chicago, Jeremy Williams.
Who knows better than to click on Greg's links?
Good God. I didn't click on them either. So we'll start a club of people who don't click on links that Greg sent. So Shadowrun came out this week, and it requires Windows Vista to run. And on the box it says requires Windows Vista, but it's in very small white writing on a light background above the title. We've already gotten letters from people who bought it, got it home, tried to install it, and it says, no, you don't have Vista. Please insert, like, $200. please insert $800. And we'll let you play. So, yeah, it's just not good. I mean, we talked before about how, you know, it's only going to hurt them to require Vista for a game that doesn't take advantage of any Vista features.
Well, it does. Again, we're talking about Live, which is now obviously, I think we can safely say a Vista only feature.
Well, for now it is, but I think that's going to change personally.
We'll see. But it is surprising that I don't mind them trying to sell people on Vista. It's, you know, obviously in their best interest to do so. But there is a hit on this. We just got our box copies today. There is a burst on this that is twice the size of the requires Windows Vista sticker. That is play with Xbox 360 gamers as if, you know, I mean, that's really cool. Believe me, I think it's really cool. But how that's more important as a burst than requires Windows Vista, you know, that's beyond me. We've gotten a couple emails from people saying that they bought the game, tried to load it up on XP, wouldn't work. They didn't know it was Vista only. We're seeing the same thing on message boards. It's, you know, once again, I think you got to chalk it up. Well, it's one of two things. Either it's a tactical error on Microsoft's part, or is it, an attempt to get people to go, oh crap, I just bought Shadowrun and I opened it, so I can't return it now. Should I just go out and buy Vista? I was going to do it anyway.
I think the latter example is a little bit more sinister than I'm really going to even blame Microsoft for. I don't think they need your business that badly, for Vista, because I mean, they've been claiming they've sold like 40 million licenses for Vista already.
Which
making it like the fastest selling OS in history and yada yada yada. So sure. I mean, they can't be that hungry for people to upgrade to Vista that they're trying to trick you into doing it.
I agree. I was just throwing it out there, but you got to admit that they certainly erred critically by making it as small as they did.
Yes, and I'll give them this though. They didn't hide it in the system requirements.
Yeah. It's there too. System requirements for the game are actually really high. It not only requires Windows Vista, but also requires a dual-core CPU, 2 gigs of RAM, and 5 gig hard drive space.
Wow. Really, it requires dual-core?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Have we ever seen a game that requires dual-core before?
No.
You could kind of argue that Supreme Commander required it.
No, it doesn't. I mean,
in a big multiplayer battle, it hurts.
Yeah, it hurts, but it doesn't require it.
No, no, no. I was being facetious. I was just saying that it basically, if you wanted to have a great experience in that game, you kind of did need multicore. But anyway, right. It is. Yeah, I think this is the first game, certainly the first that I've ever heard of that requires a multicore CPU. But then it was developed, you know, in tandem on the 360, which has three cores. So.
Yeah, the box of Supreme Commander I've got right here. It says it requires a 1.8 gigahertz processor.
No, I know that, dude.
I know. For requirements. Usually they lowball that. You know, they say like the bare minimum to be able to play it. That's incredible.
Yeah. In the long run, I think it's a good thing. I mean, you know, we want games that push hardware. Because then all the games look better and run better, and so it's in our best interest from that standpoint.
It is, but from the standpoint of people who, you know, need to upgrade their computers to play it, not such a good thing.
No.
And I mean, Shadowrun, we played a little bit. We just got our copies today. We haven't had a chance to play because we're still on XP in the office. We've got Vista at home, and I'll be playing it tonight. And we played it a little bit for a preview, and it was a lot of fun. But it's not a game I'd upgrade for. I'd upgrade my OS for, or I'd upgrade my CPU for.
Is it DirectX 10?
No,
it's not.
No. I actually, maybe I'm the only one here, but I had a sufficiently great time with it. I've got a copy of Vista from Microsoft, so I'm going to upgrade it. I'm going to upgrade my home system, which up till now has just been XP, specifically for Shadowrun. And if I had to buy the software, I actually would. Unless something changed dramatically in the month and a half since we played the game, I had such a great time when we all sat down and played it. I would definitely upgrade for this, but I don't think most people are going to do that for sure. They definitely need a killer app above and beyond this.
DJ, are you going to play this online? Are you going to create a live account just to play it?
Well, yeah. And isn't it multiplayer only?
It is multiplayer only, but are you going to get a live account so you can play against 360 gamers?
There's a 1 month live gold trial inside here, so yeah.
Well, I guess you can try that. All right.
I do feel bad for the developers though, because this is severely limiting the number of players they're going to have.
I feel bad for them because they got canned.
Well, now is that true? Is that confirmed? I'm not sure if it's confirmed. We're actually, for everybody listening, we're going to be talking with the game's lead producer next week about Shadowrun specifically. So we'll ask him about some of this stuff, but. Looks like this is back on March 19th. There was a rumor on Game Life. Looks like a blog. Let's see. It's the Game Life blog on Wired.com. Says this was apparently posted in the official forums. Shadowrun will be shipping soon. It's been a long 3 years for many on the team. I'm certain that some folks will be leaving us to do other things after we ship. That's normal and it's healthy too. As for our contingent staff here, they're just that contingent. They have a maximum amount of time. They can work here before taking a mandatory break. Many of them are complete star performers, but when the job's done, they move on, and the job's almost done. So apparently there were some. This was the response to the rumor that everyone was going to get the boot after the game shipped. So I don't actually know what happened, but based on this response, assuming it's exactly what happened took place, then. You know, that would be that. It would just be that a lot of people are contractors, and when a game's done, they move on to something else. We'll be sure to ask next week to see what actually happened. Obviously, this was from a while back. So,
but you know, even though Shadowrun needlessly requires Vista, it at least it has a couple things going for it. One, it's not 3 years old, and two, it didn't have a guy's ass in it.
Right.
Which is more than you can say for Halo 2 for Vista, which shipped with, I believe it was in the map editor. There was an error message.
Well, it didn't ship.
Well, no, it did ship. It did ship, and they're patching it on live. They had to put a bunch of stickers on the boxes, with labels saying like accidental nudity.
oh no!
Yeah.
May cause accidental nudity.
but they
help the game sell more copies.
Yeah, they're patching this like the moment you go online to play in multiplayer, it'll patch it and get rid of this, but. In the map editor, there's a certain error you get where apparently somebody on the development team thought it would be a good idea to moon you.
It's an ass error, actually.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is.
It's
like
an
No, it's an ass error.
Yeah, some
it's definitely
code.
Not an asset.
There's some coding term where it was like an ass error or .ass or something. So, you know. kind of funny that he did Muniz, but I guess the ESRB doesn't think it's quite as funny.
Which is ridiculous, because who in the hell, I mean, if you think about it, were you ever mooned, like, after the age of 15, have you ever been mooned ever again? Like, it's only kids who get mooned and moon each other. Like, who are we trying to protect here? This is ridiculous, but okay, move on.
Yeah, it's silly, but, I mean, it's really kind of funny that somebody like Bungie, or who did the PC port? Was it still Bungie, Norm?
No, it wasn't Bungie, actually.
Okay.
It's a separate company.
So it was probably those jerk bags.
When you think about it, it could have been horse12.jpg. I mean, they got off pretty easy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very tame picture. There's not a hint of sack. It's just
thank goodness.
Guy's ass. You know, I think it's kind of silly that you know, it's obviously a joke, and yeah, but I guess that's what at least one of the things that contributed to the delay of a couple weeks for the Halo 2 launch. But at least they got it out this year, unlike StarCraft 2, which Blizzard has confirmed to MSNBC that it will not ship in 07. Which doesn't surprise me at all, considering it's Blizzard and they take their time to get things right.
When we were talking to them, Dan, just a couple of weeks ago, I mean, they kind of said when it was done, you know, would be the release date, and I certainly didn't walk away from there thinking it was going to be 2007. I assumed it would be 2008. So,
But you also said it looked like it was ready to be played. I mean, it looked
absolutely, but so was Diablo 2. I mean, Diablo 2 was very playable for a long time before it ever shipped. I mean, they polished the hell out of their games. That's what they're known for. So
yeah, and it is absolutely playable, and they are playing it in their offices now. You know, they're just tweaking and tuning all over the place, and they're still putting together the Terran.
The single player, I guess.
Well, that's still yet to come, even.
Right.
So that they're playing the multiplayer just to you know, play with the balance, but you can play it, but is it anywhere near done? No. I was talking to their lead producer, and he was saying, personally, he would be very surprised if it came out in 07. Which, you know, when a developer says personally, we don't write that in the story, because, yeah. But it was no surprise to me to find out that it won't be shipping in 07. And I'm kind of glad, because that wouldn't give them much time. Get a nice appreciative token from ATI and Valve for buying any Radeon card, going back to the Radeon 7000, which I guess came out around 2000-2001. If you go on to Steam and click on their offer in there, they will it scans your computer for an ATI Radeon card, and if you have one, you get a free download of Half-Life 2 Lost Coast and Half-Life 2 Deathmatch, which, you know, it's not like you get all of Half-Life 2, but yeah, who's gonna look a free Deathmatch and brief single player episode in the mouth? The
thing is, wasn't Lost Coast free anyway, or did that require Half-Life 2?
Lost Coast that was like their tech demo, single level, single player,
but it was free.
It was free, but it required, I think, Half-Life 2, because you wouldn't download the engine, the core engine, you'd download the assets. Which is kind of funny, because if you had a Radeon, like, 7000 card or whatever it was, you're not going to be able to run all the features that the tech demo shows off.
That's right.
But it is cool that it is retroactive, so if you had, like, a 9700 Pro or 9800, you will be able to download these things for free.
And, you know, who knows, it might incentivize you to upgrade so you can see what you've been missing.
To an NVIDIA card.
Yeah.
But the new ATI cards actually just came out, the XT2900? I forget the exact numbering. But
I believe that's right, it's the HD2900 XT.
Right, HD2900, they change their numbering system so often. But in this box, they've actually partnered with Valve to include a copy of Half-Life 2 Episode 2, which doesn't even exist yet.
Yeah, well, they did the same thing. Was it the 9800 Pro that they promised an episode, Half-Life 2 copy with.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And then Half-Life 2 was pushed. Yeah, that
and so you got an apology slip.
Yeah, it came out about a year later. but hopefully, I can't imagine episode 2 is going to slip nearly that much.
That much more.
Yeah, it's already slipped quite a ways, but it'll be out soon.
Hey guys, this is Carter from Australia. I have two questions. One, I was wondering how you guys got your jobs and what kind of qualifications most of you would have gotten. And also, I want to know your high scores for Peggle and any other games that you've mentioned in the past. My current high score for the kind of learning thing, the start one, is 18 million. That was my first time, so I hope that's not too bad. Thanks.
I haven't played Peggle enough to know if that's a low or a high score, but it certainly sounds like a high score.
That's a Norm and Logan question. Norm?
18 million, I assume he means through the original introductory challenges. That's not bad. I think Logan and I both have over 20 something million. But what you really want to, account for is, a single level, how many points you can get. And Logan and I, we were both over 400,000 per level.
How do you know this stuff?
Because we play a lot of Peggle.
Are you Peggle Grandmasters?
We are Peggle Zen Masters.
Shut up.
I think Logan's a Peggle Grand High Dragon.
As to how we got into our jobs, people ask us that every now and again, but I suppose it bears repeating since we're always getting new listeners. I guess we can just go in turn. Myself, I studied English Lit in college, English literature, though I did not finish. I have senior standing. And I did a brief stint in public relations at a game company, and didn't dig that so much. Did it for a little under a year, saw a posting online for a open hardware editor position at PC Gamer. Put in my resume, had a great interview, came on board. The rest is
just sure, Greg, I'm not sure I'd go that far, Greg.
So basically you hired me. So I was the only one who interviewed. Whether I had a good or bad interview was, I guess, neither here nor there. You were just, you had to take me.
You were in the right place at the right time. Let's put it that way.
Actually, Gary, I guess at the time, I seem to recall that you didn't have a strong feeling about me either way. It was actually Matt Firm, our former editorial director, who decided that he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, my entire tenure at PC Gamer was characterized by ambivalence, I think.
I back that up. I don't recall you ever once cracking the whip. It was always Lisa Renninger, our then managing editor, who I was concerned about.
It's always been, I mean, but that's true of magazines back to, you know, the dawn of time. It's always been the job of the managing editor to kind of be the enforcer, especially when you've got an editor-in-chief who technically is the boss but is usually a little bit flaky. That was certainly true of me, and it's true of a lot of editors-in-chiefs down the road. And usually the flakier the EIC, the more of an Attila the Hun you need as a managing editor.
And the better the magazine.
I found a posting on Craigslist, actually.
He was looking for something else entirely, but he found this posting and he decided
he was looking for a casual encounter.
That's actually where PC Gamer posts his job listing, is the casual encounter section on Craigslist.
No, I'm looking for a job that gives me a full 8 inches. Is there anything like that on Craigslist?
I killed the last Norm the intern.
Yeah. Assumed his place.
Norm actually came in. Norm got in because he objected strenuously, very strongly, to the fact that I had reviewed Diablo 2, and we all thought that was funny, and so we took him on. What about you, Gary?
Mine's really not that interesting. Back in, God, what was it now? Like 1988, it would have been, so almost 20 years ago now. Jeez, you know, I liked video games. Likes to read gaming magazines, couldn't really do very much else other than write at school. Like, English was the only thing I ever got any, you know, good grades in. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll write about video games. I originally kind of wanted to program and and actually make video games. This was back in the days when, you know, there were still like single creators of games who designed and programmed and coded the whole thing themselves. But I was never very good at maths or numbers and arithmetic and logical things. I was better with words and writing, so I thought, well, I'll write about games instead. So, you know, I sat down at my little typewriter and bashed off a bunch of game reviews and sent them into a bunch of Commodore 64 magazines that I used to read at the time, and was persistent and eventually got to go in, and they gave me a game to take home and review. I think it was because it was just around the time that the Amiga was coming out, and they didn't have an Amiga yet in the office, and I had one at home because I had saved up and bought one like the day it came out. And so I think they just gave me some Amiga games to review because they didn't have anyone else who had an Amiga. So it worked out quite well for me, really, as an early adopter. And so I wrote some reviews and kind of, you know, that was kind of my foot in the door and kind of worked up from there.
Hear that? Get Windows Vista and we might hire you.
Finally a reason to get it.
Nice.
And Jeremy?
I got hired because I didn't write poorly and I knew HTML. So I got hired as the webmaster in 99 at PC Gamer. Then navigated my way to disk editor and previews editor because I love working on the magazine.
Yeah, when Dan Morris hired me, he told me that it's easy to find somebody who knows games and it's easy to find somebody who can write. But it's hard to find a combination, one person that's a combination of those two traits.
We still haven't found them.
I suspect the reason why the guy is asking this question is because, you know, he wants to kind of know how to do it himself. So, I mean, aside from just anecdotally, I'm not really the best person to give advice anymore because I'm not really in the industry. But Greg, as the editor of the magazine in this day and age, what advice would you give to someone who wants to become a games journalist? Because there's not really a traditional way in, is there?
No, there isn't. And there's no, you know, one background. Everybody here has a different scholastic background. Obviously, you just heard the way we got our jobs. We're very different. The best advice I can give is be willing to work for free. You know, it's hard to turn somebody down if they come to me saying that they'd like to write a review. They're not concerned about money. You know, they just want a shot at it. So, you know, that's probably the best way in. You know,
outside of a leprechaun.
Yes. You know, send writing samples. We will read them. There's, you know, you've got to be good. You've got to be dedicated. But you certainly don't need a degree. You just need some passion and some writing ability. We'll give you a shot. We've got plenty of people in the magazine that, you know, I mean, we have no idea what their background is. They just wrote us some samples and we liked them and we got them in the book. So that's all you got to do. Find a magazine you like, a platform you like a lot, and take a shot.
Hey, this is Pete from Columbus, Ohio again. Just wanted to say thank you very, very much for answering my last question. Though, DJ, when you used the argument that video games are not unlike any other form of media like movies and such, so it's only natural that they use violence to entertain, I heard every mother, including my wife, asking if your friends were jumping off a cliff, if you would do it too. So that didn't quite hold up with her, but it was a valiant effort, everyone. I applaud you and thank you for your time. But unfortunately, you're victims of your own success, because I have another question for you that I'm hoping you can help me out with. Some buddies of mine and I just got together not too long ago to try and play Subcom, and that game destroyed my 4-year-old system. Just chewed it up and spit it out for recyclable parts. And now I can't even get the game near my drive without it thumbing its nose at me. So I know I've got to take care of that and get something new, but I guess my question is, how long do I have to wait for the quad course to come down to the current price point of the duo course? And when that does happen, do you think it's cheaper for me to buy or to build, knowing that I've got basically nothing that I'm going to be able to use from my current system? All the components are too outdated. And that if I do buy, I'll probably end up getting another monitor so I can play Subcom on 2 monitors and a service plan and an operating system. So just wondering, is it cheaper for me to buy or is it cheaper for me to build? And, you know, what the heck do you have to run Subcom with a whole bunch of friends with all the highest settings? Because, man, that just sucked every inch of life out of my computer. So just wondering how beefy of a system you really need to have. Thank you guys very much, and hope you have a great day. Keep up the good work. Love the podcast.
I told you, Dan. I told you it basically required multi-core.
Well, it doesn't. Well, it says the recommended. The recommended specs are a 3 gigahertz Intel or AMD equivalent, 1 gigabyte. It doesn't say anything about dual core on the recommended.
I mean, to answer the guy's question, which...
What?
You got to answer the guy's question. I mean, whether he wants to buy or build, it's always going to be better to build.
Well...
That's not actually true. There are companies like iBuyPower where you can buy... If you're willing to buy from a company that doesn't have a big name like Dell or Alienware or, you know,
or necessarily really great customer service.
Right. But you can actually buy, you know, built systems that are as inexpensive, if not less expensive, than they'd be if you bought the components individually. Because obviously, if you buy a lot of parts online, you're also going to have to pay for shipping, things like that. So iBuyPower, a surprisingly good deal. There are very, very few builders out there that will build you a system as inexpensively as they will.
Is that not the case with Dell anymore? Last time I priced them out, they were about the same as if I were to build it. Plus, they sort of threw in the service.
Dell can sometimes get you pretty close to build prices, but they're not giving you all the components you necessarily want.
And they use a lot of proprietary stuff, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So with iBuyPower, you really do get, you know, a custom-built system with, you know, you have a large choice of cases, of CPUs, of video cards and cooling, what have you. You can really have them deck the thing out for you. And it's surprisingly inexpensive. Go check it out. Go check out their website at iBuyPower.com.
They're not a big company, so they don't expect a whole lot of customer service.
Yeah, agreed. That is the one complaint we've heard over and over again from from our readers who have bought systems from them, is that customer support is a bit lacking. But then you'd have no customer support whatsoever if you bought your own components individually.
Now, for me, the only reason to really build your own machine anymore is if you want the ability to freely upgrade. Because with a pre-bought machine, sometimes, like, for example, I have a machine here that I gutted out all the old stuff and put in, like, a new motherboard, CPU, and stuff like that. The power source wiring was in there, it's nice when it's all wired neatly away, but if you want to upgrade, it is such
a
pain.
It's a pain in the butt, yep.
Oh, my God. But, just if you want things to, you know, be the way you want them in there, it's really, you know, a hobbyist thing. If you're into hardware, build your own. If you're not, then, you know, it doesn't matter.
And then he also asked, quad core go down the price of dual core?
I'm actually looking, when I used to be the hardware guy, and I was working on our Trinity, for the pricing of parts, I would just always go to pricewatch.com, and that's where I am right now. And it looks like the prices have already come down fairly significantly.
Oh, yeah, there was a big price drop not too long ago, but I mean, things always take a while to shift. I mean, it's really until the next big thing comes out. They're not going to come down to the price of what was previously the next big thing.
AMD has their quad FX stuff out pretty much now. Although that's not, it's a different type of quad core. It's not on one.
It's two dual cores.
Yeah, it's two dual cores.
Takes up a lot of power.
Intel, I think, just announced, or I know MaxPC just did a feature on the next Intel chip, Penryn. So when that comes out, then the current gen of the quad-core stuff is going to drop.
But we don't expect that until next year. So if you want to play a subcom, I'd go ahead and get the dual-core now.
Yeah, a dual-core really, really helps in subcom. I have one, and I don't, especially with the recent patches, the performance has increased a lot. I haven't had any real slowdown on. I've been playing that game a lot lately. So,
and also if you're still in XP, if you're not yet in Vista, you know, most games support multi-core, will only support two cores anyway. So if you're not planning to upgrade to Vista for a while, and you can find a dual core CPU for cheap, and a lot of them are pretty cheap now, it's definitely a good inexpensive upgrade.
Just to rebut your wife saying, should we, you know, if all the other forms of media show violence, why do computer games have to? Well, like I said, there are a bunch of games that don't, just like there are a bunch of movies that don't. It's you know, your personal taste. If you happen to like violent movies, you'll go see a violent movie. If you happen to like violent games, you'll go play a violent game. If you don't, there are plenty of nonviolent games. I don't see why games should have to limit themselves to nonviolent stuff.
Hi, this is a Belgian listener, Starlight, and I have a question for Gary. I heard that you might be writing part of the storyline for Diablo 3. If so, could you please give us the inside scoop on that one? Actually, this is kind of old news. This has been out since last week, so I really hope that you forgot, quote-unquote, to tell us. I mean, you wouldn't do that to all of us Diablo fans out there, would you? Also, Greg's sitting right next to you, I imagine, so you must have told him something. And the EU.Diablo.com domain is pointing to the BlizzCon site. So it's possible that they might be announcing Diablo 3 at the BlizzCon 2007 event. And last but not least, have you heard of any news for a new Gabriel Knight game? You know the old Gabriel Knight series by Sierra? I really miss those. All right, thanks.
Gaz?
Yeah, so Gabriel Knight.
Well, I think what's happened here is Variety magazine confirmed that you were working on a Diablo screenplay, which I know you can't really discuss.
Well, so the listener got the wrong end of the stick. Yeah. Diablo 3, that hasn't even been announced, and no one even knows if that's something Blizzard is even doing. Although, you know, just like StarCraft 2, you'd think it's something that, like, makes sense that they would do, but they certainly haven't announced anything, and I know nothing about it. So I'm not doing anything like that. What happened was Variety, and the Hollywood Reporter, and, you know, those kind of movie trade publications, published a story about another movie that I'm doing with Warner Brothers, which is a completely, like, a non-related video game thing. But at the end of that story, there was this kind of little sign-off that said I was working on Diablo for Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures and Blizzard Entertainment. Legendary Pictures being the company, the production company at Warner Brothers that about a year ago announced that they were going to make a World of Warcraft movie, but didn't announce anything about Diablo or anything like that. Variety reported that, that's really all I can say. I'm unfortunately not at liberty to really comment in any way about the veracity of that story.
So Gabriel Knight.
So Gabriel Knight. I certainly haven't heard anything about it. Dan, have you heard anything?
Not a peep. Yeah. Sierra had a game day recently, and they invited all the press to come look at their stuff, and they didn't say anything about it. So that's all we got.
Hey guys, I was wondering if I should get a PSP. The price went down to $180, but I can't really find any games that I want for it. What do you guys think about it, if any of you have it? Should I get it, or should I just let it pass by like I did with the DS? Thanks a lot.
I actually got a PSP pretty early on when they came out. I got caught up in the hype, you know. I think I might have even gotten it day one.
I was there midnight.
Yeah. And I loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it for about a week. And it's been collecting dust on my shelf ever since. I literally have not turned it on probably in a year. I find that the battery life isn't long enough for me to take it on plane flights. I don't have any interest in, like, you know, playing it before I go to bed or anything like that. I don't commute. I'm not on a bus or anything. So, for me, I do regret having bought the system. It's just, it's really gone unused. If I was going to buy any handheld, if I was going to play any handheld these days, it probably would be a DS.
You know, Chuck actually loves his PSP.
He does.
And one of the games he loves is Marvel Ultimate Alliance. He actually played it both on PSP, or also on PC and 360, actually. Yeah. But there are a bunch of PSP games coming out. The price would go down, and I think they're announcing, like, God of War and some new other tactical shooters.
The games are cool, but, like, all the newer games, like, they require the disc to be spinning more, which cuts down on battery life that much more, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not that there aren't good games. There's actually some really strong games. It's that you can't go anywhere for more than a couple of hours that doesn't have an outlet for you to plug into.
And there have been rumors every month. There's a rumor about a new version of the PSP coming out, like a smaller, slimmer version, or one with more battery life, better screen. And they did that with the DS, so I wouldn't be surprised if Sony did that. But if you had to pick, a handheld today to buy, I think a DS would be the best one.
The other thing, though, is the PSP is not a bad little media player, because you can put a 4 gigabyte stick into it, and I think they've now, as of this year,
you can get an 8 gigabyte stick now.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, even newer.
So yeah, I think they've unlocked the full resolution of the PSP now for your own home video encoding, so you can now take advantage of the full res. Which,
yeah, before it had to be stretched.
Yeah, before it was pretty bad. But so it's okay, actually a 480 by 272 pixel screen. It's pretty sharp.
But how long does the battery last? Granted, you don't have any moving parts in that equation. But
yeah,
how much more battery life do you get? Because you could take a Zen, you could take a video iPod, or you could take a Creative Zen Vision, and they'll last for hours upon hours. You could take them on a
4 hours switcher. Playing video.
Yeah. So.
It works. I think it's pretty good actually, and I've got something here for my PSP, and I've also got a similar thing for my iPod that I used when I went to Europe over Christmas. Was just kind of like a thing that plugs into the iPod or PSP that you just put regular AA batteries in, so that when the internal battery pack runs out, as long as you've got like a little packet of AA batteries with you, you can keep it going, for as long as you can keep putting batteries in it.
How long do the AA batteries last?
I think I actually don't know because they never ran out. They did. They worked really well for me. But that's if you're concerned about that kind of extended play between charges, then one of those little gizmos, they're available for all kinds of gadgets now. There's an iPod one. There's one for the PSP. The only thing about the media player, I mean, it does work pretty well. I've watched movies and stuff on my PSP. It's not an entirely drag and drop solution. There's usually some transcoding that you have to go through to get, whatever media format you've got, whether it's a DVD or a video that you've downloaded, you usually have to run that through a transcoding program, and that, that's very processor intensive and can take a lot of time, so much so that some of the programs are designed to be left running overnight, and in the morning, you go to your PC and all your items have transcoded. So it is a bit of a pain, but, if you're going on a long trip, then it can be worth doing that to fill up a memory stick with lots of media.
It can also be a handy little web browser. Like if you're at a hotel and you need to check your email, it actually is pretty good for that. I've used it for that on trips.
And do you still need like a third-party hack to do that, or is it now?
No. It's all built in. Has an RSS reader. It's all built in now with all the subsequent firmware updates that they've had.
Interesting. I never even got that far. I never did a firmware upgrade, a single one.
Hi, PC Gamer. This is Cattle out in New Jersey. This isn't really a question, just kind of a story that I thought you might find amusing. Every year I fly out to California to attend an annual weekend LAN party. I've been doing this for the past 5 years or so. Traditionally, the group plays Counter-Strike, but recently we've been branching out into newer games like Battlefield 2142. During a lull in this year's weekend, I fired up Peggle, which I had picked up after your hearty endorsement on the podcast sometime back. Needless to say, Peggle was a hit. It kind of spread like fruity wildfire. Within an hour, I had the entire LAN playing their own copies of the game. We even had a few competitive tournaments for time to completion and highest score. Wow. The majority of our elite gaming weekend was spent on Peggle. So we're now joking that we might be a full-on Peggle clan, so our website needs to be redone. So thanks for the recommendation on Peggle, thanks for the magazine, and keep up the good work. Oh, and Kristen has a very sexy voice. Gary.
What?
How is that possible? I just don't get it. I mean, it's a fun little game.
I'm playing it right now. That's how fun it is.
Oh, God. I'll give it another shot. But I just don't get it.
I think it's great. Yeah, Peggle Clan for the win.
How many hours do you think you've invested so far, Norm?
Oh, I think you should phrase that on how much work I could have been doing.
Well, no, but I'm honestly curious.
How many hours?
Like how many? Yeah, like 40
it's
hours?
Gotta be, no, not that many, because the games are quick. You're spending no more than like half an hour.
But you're always doing it. You're an unpaid intern. It's all you do.
Maybe 30, maybe 25 hours.
Wow, that's total? Still a lot.
Dude, I've spent a lot more than that. I mean, I'm only a Peggle Grandmaster. I don't know about being a Zen Master, but...
Well, that's the thing. I'm intuitive.
I see.
His name was Cattle? Was that your name? Cattle? It might be onto something. I mean, the reality is if this game is that infectious and everybody's playing it, then, it's not outlandish to think that people will, try to get together and want to play communally and try to beat each other's scores. So I guess all things considered, there are crazier things than a Peggle clan.
Greg, what have you been playing? Go.
Go. I've actually, this is where I'm going to step on my get up on my platform and talk about Google Streets. Because that's what I've been playing the last couple of days. I guess it went live yesterday. Is that when the beta went up?
Google Street View, right?
Google Street View, which in case you're unaware, Google Maps for a while now has had satellite views. So if you want to look at your house from space, you can get like a very fuzzy image of your home depending on where you are in the country.
It's not from space, it's aerial photography.
I thought it was satellite photography.
It's a combination of satellite and aerial photography.
So it is sometimes from space then?
At the furthest out zoom levels, yes.
So then you owe me an apology.
No, I don't.
I'd say you do, but you know
you,
what?
I'm going to be bigger than you. You can't see your house from space.
I'm going to see the government can. I'll admit, assuming you're correct, I didn't know that it transitioned from satellites to plane views. But anyhow, a new feature is the Street View, which in beta form allows you to basically look down any street at street level in San Francisco and, see the homes and the businesses on the sides of those streets and, pan around in 360. And yesterday, everybody was super excited. Like, they thought it was so cool, and it is so cool. And then, by last evening, everybody's like, the excitement had worn off, and people are like, wait a second, isn't this a little like Big Brother? Like, I think it's cool that I'm looking at somebody else's house, but is it really so cool that people can look and see what's going on in my house? Or not in my house, but at my house? So that sparked a whole bunch of debate today around the office about, constitutional rights to privacy and, state and federal laws. We had a whole bunch of roundabouts. I was trying to get Dan to talk about it today in the podcast, but he pointed out that it's not about games, so we weren't going to discuss it. So screw you, Dan. I'm talking about it now in my playlist.
It really is an astonishing technology. Yeah. But like you say, once the wonder of how on earth did they do this wears off, it is a bit scary. I dialed into my own street and, I can see my own car and my own house.
Exactly. I looked at my, because I used to live with Gary, and so I just popped that address in, and then, Gary, your car was parked in its parking spot.
Apparently, I haven't confirmed this, but someone told me today that Matt Drudge, on his website, has been using it to post pictures of people exiting strip clubs.
Yep, and adult bookstores, and posting locations of celebrities' houses.
Yeah, there was something on Dig about that.
What they do is there's an article on Gizmodo today which explains how it's done. They basically just drive around with a special roof-mounted 360 camera, kind of a spherical camera with like 12 different lenses. And I guess it's capturing images all the time, and then they take it back and they composite this kind of quasi, almost like, kind of like QuickTime VR, I guess, is the closest thing in terms of the effect. Only it seems a little bit better because you can actually kind of move in and out. You can actually kind of move down the street and then stop at a different point and look around. I mean, technologically, it's absolutely astonishing. I'm not quite sure what the practical use of it is, but it's certainly got a lot of people talking.
I think it's great for like if you're going someplace and you want to know what a place looks like without, because a lot of places addresses aren't posted. So I mean if you want to know what to look for, it's great for that.
Yeah. On the other hand, here was the issue that I raised earlier today. Like if you've got, let's say you've got a stalker who's emailed you, not exactly threatening emails, but you know emails to the effect that I don't know, something sexual in nature. And then, that person was sitting in front of your house, let's say once or twice a day, on the street, taking photographs of your house. You probably have a very good case for filing a harassment charge against that guy and at least getting, a restraining order against him. So now, what's the difference between that guy standing out in front of your house and taking pictures of you, let's say a couple times a day? Obviously, that's not as many times as they're updating it currently. But let's say the technology gets to be to a point where there's a lot of cameras out there and they're updating these photos regularly. What's the difference between that guy standing out in front of your house and taking photographs of you and your home, stalking you that way, and him sitting at his computer and letting Google take those photographs and sort of spying on you that way? I think this is going to open up a huge assortment of various and sundry lawsuits relating to privacy. Because much like A lot of the laws now, you know, when Jack Thompson tries to get these video game bills passed, and they talk about, you know, excessively violent video games, and they keep getting shot down one after the other because the term excessively violent is vague to a point where you don't actually know what it means. And I think in today's modern age, the word privacy has become vague. We need to redefine it. So I think this is sort of a fascinating social experiment. It'll be very interesting to see what happens, how the laws change, just because of this little thing that Google is doing.
I think personally that you are overreacting, because there is literally no way that Google could install cameras on every street to look into every house, or even have a fleet of cars going around taking pictures at a frequency that would be anywhere near what you're worried about.
It's just a matter of time. Granted, they can't.
Yeah, but there's no reason to address your earlier question, Greg. First of all, there's a big difference between systematically targeting one specific person or location and mapping, you know, an entire geographic area, which is what they're trying to do here. And you know, the other issue is, I mean, first of all, it would be cost in. What's the point of like having cars driving around, say, refreshing these street view images every day, so that you know that the image you're getting is from today? I can see them maybe doing it once every 6 months or once every year, so the images are roughly up to date. But you know, what's the point in having an image updated regularly? It just needs to be kind of a, you know, I'm looking at images here that I would recognize that street corner, even though that picture was maybe taken a year or more ago.
That's what it is today, Gary. But what if it becomes a system where, you know, it could be, you know, what is it called when you form a group in your neighborhood?
Neighborhood watch.
Like a neighborhood watch. You know, they want to start using it. So the technology gets cheap enough where basically anybody in a neighborhood can strap these things onto their cars and plug into Google and update these things, you know, the photos on a regular basis. Obviously, that's not happening now. But certainly the technology is only going to get cheaper, and you can imagine.
But unless it's real time, it's not going to be a neighborhood watch. I mean, does it
matter? But if these are all images that are taken from the street in public places, whose privacy is being invaded? And I would make the argument that probably the public good would ultimately be greater served, because, you know, I would imagine there's a much greater database of crimes and things that, you know.
But here's the thing, is I looked this up this morning, and granted it's just Wikipedia I'm looking it up on, so obviously it can be wrong, but there is debate over, you know, what constitutes somebody's right to privacy and somebody's right to privacy on their property and where their property extends to. So in other words, if you are in your garage and the garage door is open and you are in your garage working, the question is do you have the reasonable assumption of privacy or not? Some people would argue yes. Because you are in your home, in your property. Some people would argue no, because your garage door is open. But you are in your property, and, you know, you could argue that you do have that right to privacy, and that's the type of argument that's going to have to be made and argued. And I think probably some new laws will trickle out of this little social experiment that Google is currently unveiling.
I think if it evolves greatly, as I'm sure it's going to evolve, this is just the beginning of this technology, then those conversations, you know, will become more and more interesting. As of right, in terms of what we're looking at right now, you know, apart from that handful of people that have been caught walking, you know, just weren't lucky enough to be walking outside of a strip club, or, you know, with their mistress on the day that the Google van drove past, you know, I don't think anyone has too much to worry about.
But that's the thing, Gaz. It's just, this is, you can see where that you know, you're a 30-something. You remember how different the world was 10, 20 years ago. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize how quickly this technology will advance, how cheap it'll get, and how real-time the surveillance could become in not too long a time. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not taking a side. I'm not taking a position on either side. I'm just saying it's interesting to watch how this all plays out, because there are definite camps forming, the people who love it and think it's not a big deal, and the people who definitely feel like their privacy is being infringed, and that's gonna, you know, it's gonna stir up controversy. There's gonna be debate. I think healthy debate. Like I said, I think some new laws will probably be passed as a result. Time will tell.
So now that we've had a totally irrelevant 10-minute conversation that has nothing to do with games, which is why I wanted to avoid this in the first place, is anybody actually playing a game?
I plan to install Vista and play Shadowrun tonight.
I think we all are going to do that tonight.
Well, I already have Vista installed, so.
We're all going to play Shadowrun tonight, then.
And obviously everybody else is playing Peggle. So.
I've been incredibly busy this week and haven't really had the time to play anything, but I'm very excited about the prospect of some of the games that I might soon be playing thanks to Microsoft's new Surface technology, which was also also announced this week around the same time as Google Street View. And,
right, it's a technological development that actually have some application to gaming. Hooray!
It could have some. Well, but hold on. Even with Street View, maybe you could imagine some kind of. Seriously, couldn't you imagine some kind of majestic Uber game that involves this, right? Yeah, exactly. Actual reality type stuff.
Yeah, you search for things and you do some kind of hunting and.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was just talking to someone today. They used to do one of these kind of amazing race type things where people run around the city searching for clues, and then you've got a team of people back kind of at base camp that are Googling for the clues, trying to help them and talking on cell phones, and was saying that, they can imagine that with the Street View type technology, that could become a much richer experience. So the you can certainly imagine game applications for it.
All right. but with Microsoft Surface thing.
Microsoft Surface, for those who aren't aware, is basically just kind of an elaborate tabletop touchscreen type technology. But it does really kind of cool things, like you put your Zune for, half a dozen people actually have a Zune.
Actually,
1 million people, and that's right, well done, Zune. You can put your Zune on the table, or your digital camera, or whatever, and like, so if you put your digital camera on the tabletop, like your photos will kind of digitally like spill out of it onto the tabletop. They will tumble out. And you can examine them and resize them and do all kinds of cool stuff.
And then move them to other devices.
Yeah. The one thing, you put your credit card on the table and the table will read the smart chip in it and you can get information. The one little clip that I liked, it just seemed like a really clever little application, was where it was a tabletop in a restaurant. And when the check comes at the end of the meal, everyone puts their credit cards on the table and all the different items of food and drinks that you ordered appear as little visual icons. And you drag the drinks and the food that you ordered kind of onto the appropriate credit cards, and that's how you split the check. Like, that's awesome. It just seems really cool.
That's it. From what I've been reading, that seems like the initial uses, that's where it'll be. It'll be like in restaurants, not just for when you pay, but when you're ordering. Imagine a restaurant where, the servers only bring the food out until, RoboSapien 3 comes out, starts delivering the food for you that way. But you could totally place orders, obviously pay your bill right from your table. It's really slick.
And it's nothing you can buy now. It'll only be available to their initial partners, which are casinos, restaurants, and other entertainment places. And it's $10,000.
It would be kind of cool for video card games. You get cards on the table. And one of the really cool things about it is the multi-touch technology, where you can be with most touch screens up until this point. If you touch them in one place and you touch them in somewhere else, it freaks out. It doesn't know what to do. this one you can
touch it between its legs, and what?
It won't freak out.
Sorry, I thought we were talking about something else. My apologies.
But it's very. I mean, I guess the closest example that we've already seen is kind of the technology in Minority Report when Tom Cruise was kind of shuffling through the images and resizing them and stuff.
Mm. Right. This doesn't float in the air.
It doesn't float in the air, but it's a similar principle.
We're almost
it's really, really cool. It's going to be a long, long time before we see this in the home. But like, as you say, like commercial lounges, hotels, restaurants, airports, places like that are going to be using this pretty soon, I think.
Mm-hmm. But what kind of game would you like to play on there besides the card game?
RTSs.
Yeah, it would be cool to play Supreme Commander on there and use like the kind of technique they use to enlarge a photo, to expand and zoom in on the screen. I guess one of the first demonstrations of multi-touch technology I saw, somebody was playing, I think, Warcraft 3 with it.
Yep. I think it's the same people, actually, who did this one.
Yeah.
And that was the initial tech demo, and then Microsoft bought them out or partnered with them.
Or, threatened their families. Yeah, it could be very cool for gaming.
A couple of points that people I'd spoken to during the week that had mentioned is that the horizontal angle of the table is maybe not ideal. Ultimately you're going to be kind of like hunched over the table. It might be better to have certain applications for this where it's kind of more of like an easel, and then where it's kind of more of an angle. And the other argument is buy stock in Windex now, because this is going to be a lot of smeary glass tabletops in the over the next 50 years.
very true.
Because of our smudgy fingers. Or maybe they've got a kind of a smear-proof laminate or something. I don't know. That would be pretty cool.
I can think of a liquid that would probably help smear-proof the surface. I sent a picture to you guys over Skype.
No. Don't look at it. A thing once seen cannot be unseen.
Sorry.
I've been playing a whole lot of Supreme Commander the last week. They put out a new patch, rebalanced a bunch of things. At first I was getting my ass handed to me. I was getting beaten by people who figured out the economy better than me and managed to take and hold some of the resources that I should have done a better job of protecting. And I just got overwhelmed, even though they weren't micromanaging their units at all. There was one game I played last night where a guy sent just a constant stream of just hundreds of units at me, and I finally beat him by just building up a huge defensive line and pushing forward and pushing forward and pushing forward. But if he had used experimental units, I would have been toast. But yeah, I'm still having a lot of fun with that game. Norm?
I've been getting my ass kicked in StarCraft by DJ.
Yes.
In StarCraft 1. But I'll be playing Shadowrun tonight, and I'll be on Xbox Live, so if anyone wants to play me, my live account name is PCG Norman.
It's really funny when Norm comes up to me begging to play StarCraft again. I'm like, Norm, you're just going to get your ass kicked again. But he's like, no, this time it'll be better. And then like, you know, 20 minutes into the game, I'll come up to his base with like 10 Marines and 2 tanks, and he still won't have more than like 3 units. It's... Like, come on, Norm. Come on.
Dan's just so glad to have something to beat up on again after getting his ass kicked for the last couple weeks by Korean schoolgirls.
Yeah. Well, I paid them to do that, though. Jeremy?
I replayed Half-Life Episode 1, actually, this weekend because I'm just so excited about Team Fortress and all the footage that's been coming out on the web. So I went back to see how the engine's holding up, and it's a great...
Holding pretty well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm actually considering playing Half-Life 2 again, but that game's just so long. But I love Episode 1. It's fantastic.
It's not that long a game, really. It's like, what, 9 or 10 hours?
It's just 9 or 10... Oh, God. I just don't like that whole zombie middle section. I wasn't a big fan of that.
That's the freaky part. That's the good part.
It's fun.
I liked it. I enjoyed it when it was new. Like, when you get to it and it's like, you know, it's really scary, but it loses some suspense if you unrepeat the playthroughs.
If Valve went back and added in their... commentary into Half-Life 2, I would definitely go back and check that out.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But I actually fired up Half-Life 2 and Lost Coast recently, just to play around with maxing out the settings on my new monitor and my 8800. It looks gorgeous. It scaled really well. And even how old is it now? It's like a year and a half, 2 years old,
mm-hmm. Something like that. Yep.
Yeah, it still looks awesome. I mean, it's going to be outshone or outshined by Crysis shortly, but still looks great.
Hey, did you guys see the BioShock video that hit the web yesterday?
I watched about half of it, but my connection was going really slow.
How is it?
It's really good, and it's long. It's at least like 5 or 6 minutes, and it's just all this great new footage I hadn't seen before, and it really looks fantastic.
Yeah, they do some amazing things with that game. It's not that far off either.
It looks scary.
Yep.
All right, are we done?
So, yeah, we should wrap this thing up before Greg goes off on more of society's ills.
I've got a story here before we go.
Oh, Christ, here we go.
From the world of Hollywood, the world of Hollywood glamour that you'll enjoy. It's actually been around on the internet for a couple of days now, but I just saw it and it's making me laugh. The director... Mike Figgis, who directed, Leaving Las Vegas and other movies like that, was coming through LAX because he had been hired to direct a pilot episode of a new TV show. And so when he went through security and they asked him, what is the purpose of your visit, he said, I'm here to shoot a pilot, and was arrested.
Oh, no. That's a true story?
No, it's a true story. He was detained for like 5 hours while they figured out what he was talking about. And after he explained himself...
Oh, my.
That was one of those things where as soon as he said it, he went, oh, my God, I'm a guy. I take it back. It's not what I meant. Oh, my God.
find it. Didn't yeah. they not go, what? And he said, no, I meant a TV pilot. Or did
it doesn't
they,
even
did
go
they,
that far.
I mean, I think these TSA people these days are, you know, you see those signs that say don't even joke about things because, you know, we're not allowed to have a sense of humor or to interpret anything. You know, if you say something,
literal.
We just, yeah, everything's literal with these guys now.
Right, but I mean that's not a joke. That's just a you know poor choice of phrase. That
I know, but I think as soon as you say anything that sets these people's alarms off, you know they're not going to listen to your explanation. They have to go through the routine of like shoving you in a room and stuff. I think.
Yes, because rational thought goes out the window. But anyway, to just to wrap this up before any more amusing anecdotes. So that we can all get back to our lives. Please check out our upcoming Showdown LAN party at www.showdownland.com. And we'll see you next week for myself, Dan Stapleton, and Greg Viederman, Norman Chan, Jeremy Williams, and Gary Witta. We'll see you next week.
Gary, you owe it to yourself to click on this one.
Oh, good God. Make him stop.
Hold on. Oh, and is this gonna bother me? Oh! What is that supposed to be, even?
I don't know!
Where are you finding this stuff?
Oh, boy.
Stop madness.
As appalling as that was, I'm sure it's just as bad, if not, maybe this is even worse, in fact. The fact that Shadowrun not only requires Vista to
nice transition.
I'm trying. I'm doing what I can with what you have given me to work with.
That's an old favorite.
The worst part of it was not the video, but the sound of like the noises the horse was making.
Oh my God.
Oh, this is horrible.
Let me just ask you one last film-related question, because you are, I think you could say here, you'd say you're a film expert at this point. You're a movie professional. So what do you think on the brilliant scale of the new Transformers movie, based on the latest trailer?
Who can say? I will definitely go see it first weekend, because it's one of those movies that demands to be seen with the insane crowd.
No, it doesn't. Not if you ask DJ.
I think it deserves to be shunned.
Dan has taken a bet from both Norm and myself that with 70 reviews in, the Rotten Tomatoes score will be 55% or lower.
And Dan has kind of become this like inverse barometer of what's good and what's bad. Like if he says he definitely doesn't want to see Transformers, for me that's like a big thumbs up.
Yeah.
I think that the story, as a movie. Like the story and the characters and all that kind of stuff will be like blah, but there'll be enough
totally.
Amazing shit going on that who cares? Yeah. Dungeon masters don't have levels, dork. Like, yeah.